You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com on WCRS FM 98.3 and 102.1, Central Ohio's only community radio station, a service of the Neighborhood Network and TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or KNE World Network, LLC.
Welcome to Crossing Cultures, a forum for creating conversations and celebrating our communities. TalkTainmentRadio.com, the world's greatest radio. You're in touch with Crossing Cultures. I'm Julia Lynn Walker, and this is radio the way it should be heard. Today, we have two representatives, two lovely members of the Columbus African American Bibliophiles Club, based here in Columbus, and it is a book club, and I want to welcome both Diane Middleton and Deborah Johnson.
Thank you, and good morning.
All right.
Good morning.
And so we're here to talk about reading and enjoying literature and participating in a group activity on a regular basis. And we're also going to talk about economics, because that's part of it. So perhaps, Deborah, you could start and share with us something about the book club. What's it about? When did it start? Who are members? You know?
Yeah, our book club started about 30 years ago. And it started with a group of librarians who were coming together wanting to explore books about and by African Americans. And the book has grown. We've always had a closed membership, so we only had no more than 18 members at any one time. And we have discussed everything from classics to nonfiction, fiction, children's stories, you name it, we have covered it.
Well, I think it's fantastic that, you know, for 30 years, yeah. A group of people, are you primarily sisters or are men in the group?
Yeah. No, oh no, just strictly sisters. That's another group.
Yeah. I'll say, so for 30 years, you know, an evolving or rotating
exactly.
or migrating group of sisters
exactly.
has come together monthly.
Monthly, every Sunday a month.
One Sunday a month
yeah.
to read a book by or about African Americans or the African diaspora, because surely
exactly.
you read books by Africans as well.
I think
you're going to have a discussion.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And then something else that was interesting when you said you also look at buying the book.
Trying to support.
Okay.
Yeah, trying to support the author. In our early years, we were fortunate enough to find authors who are local. And then we bring them into the discussion. Oh, we go and visit them. If they were coming to town or somewhere close by, we go and support them by being there for a book discussion. But if we could at all engage that author, we try to do that as well.
Okay. So yeah. the group of librarians, of course, would also be interested in having, you know, people use
sure.
the resources of the
sure.
library.
Exactly.
That's been quite extensively used. Several of the members who are librarians have used the library's reserve list to get as many copies as possible for book club members.
Okay, so then it also encourages the library to
absolutely.
Buy more copies
exactly.
and helps to promote African literature within the library
absolutely.
System.
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
Good. So it's also very important just both to encourage the production of literature by and about African Americans.
That's exactly right.
Okay, good.
Right.
And then as part of this as well, I'm just curious, is that, you know, people who are visiting in the community, who are authors, you would try to arrange a time that you go to see them perhaps or
sure.
invite
as a book
them?
Group, members go to wherever the author is, whether it be the main library or one of the book chain outlets. Mm-hmm. You know, if
exactly.
we know that person is coming, some of us will show up.
Or if there's a stage someplace. We've had Rita Dove here.
Mm-hmm.
We go wherever we can find them. But, and often, we're the only African Americans represented in that group, which
it's,
is yeah,
it's sad. Once
it's an
again.
Unfortunate thing. Yeah.
So and I'm sure it's encouraging for the author to be able to look out and to see people who look like her.
Exactly.
And then, do you interact with other book clubs?
Yes. There's a book group from Cleveland that one of our members invites every.
July,
and they come down and we have a joint meeting and decide which book will be discussed, talk business, and that same member also goes every year to the Harlem Book Fair in New York to pick up titles and meet authors and be able to come back and discuss some of those activities that took place in Harlem with us.
Good. All right. And you also said you talk business. So that gets to the business of how do you decide which titles to read?
It's a fluid process. There's always one children's book, be it young adult or juvenile literature, that the book group selects to read. And then we'll take current novels. Mm-hmm. We'll take novels of historical interest. As Deborah said, reading the classics has been important, fiction and nonfiction,
exactly.
So that you get a rounded perspective of what's being published. So it might not be an author who's still alive, but we need to know something about what informed that person when they wrote the book. So
absolutely.
We've even read African-American science fiction. I mean, just...
Oh, well, yes. I mean, Octavia Butler's one of my favorites.
Hello. So we reach way out there. Tana Nariv Du.
Right.
We've done the whole spectrum.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So then what are some of the recent titles that you have, read or are planning to read? And it may have been last year, or what's coming up?
Well, one of the things I remember that really struck my heart last year was the 12 Tribes of Hattie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so wonderful.
It was just something about it that settled on me. And so it didn't take me long to read that. I whizzed through it and I was ready for book discussion that day. It was just an uplifting book.
Very much so.
And can you just share with the listening audience something of what it was about so that those who may be interested could go out and purchase one or get it from the library?
Okay, let me dig back. Uh-huh. 12 Tribes of Hattie was about a woman who had at least 12
children.
Yes,
you sure did.
It starts out, I believe, in the Depression. Mm-hmm. She moves from a rural area to Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. She and her husband do the best that they can with what they have, mm-hmm. which is not a lot. But she loses her twin children mm-hmm. very mm-hmm. early on, just through...
Oh, it was awful.
Economic deprivation. She yeah. did everything she could to save those children,
yeah.
but couldn't.
Yeah. And had a bad fever, couldn't.
With each succeeding yeah. child that she had, we come to see how they are shaped by her loss.
Mm.
So,
okay,
you have to pick it up and not put it down. Go through it.
And I believe Ayanna Mathis was in Columbus at some point last year as well. Mm-hmm. And I think perhaps some people from the club attended that session.
Exactly.
Okay. And do you remember other titles, Deborah, that the book club read last year?
Last year. Mm-hmm. We've had so many.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of what was our big book last year. That was my favorite last year.
Yeah,
was the 12 Tribes of Hattie. This year we did The Brief Wonderful Life of Oscar Wilde.
Okay.
We've done Who Asked You, Terry McMillan's book for African American History Month.
Right.
And of course, we celebrate it every month. we don't reserve it for one month.
So perhaps share with the audience Terry McMillan's book, the one that you did for February.
Oh, it was traditional. I mean, it was just vintage Terry McMillan. So
even the title,
Who asked you? if you listen to the audio book, you had Felicia Rashad, who was really wonderful, characterizing. It's a familiar struggle of a dysfunctional family of three sisters. Two sisters who had done reasonably well in life but had their own struggle. And one mom who lived in California. They came from Louisiana but were living in California. And the mom was struggling with her three kids, a daughter who was addicted to drugs, a son in prison, and a son who was a chiropractor who had just gotten rid of all his roots, cut ties with all his roots, right. and was married to a white woman and living away and trying to forget that he was ever living with this family. Mm-hmm. And it was all about their connecting with one another and their struggle. But it was interesting.
In the end, it was a family story as well.
Absolutely.
Because the sister who raised her grandchildren, because mm-hmm. that's what it got down mm-hmm. to, mom died of a drug overdose after she left the children with mom. She raised the children, saw them to adulthood, and then focused on regaining her sense of self.
Exactly.
And becoming the woman she wanted to be at that stage in her life, which was about, what, 65?
Exactly. Yeah. Her husband had Alzheimer's. He was decidedly older, and she was taking care of him.
He died.
He died, and, you know, just the struggles on the street with the best friend across the street, getting involved with things. It was you know, but a story that resonates. Yeah.
Mm, okay.
Absolutely.
Now, you know, Oprah likes to take claim.
Starting book club,
you know,
no,
but clearly,
no.
You predated Oprah,
absolutely.
All right, and it would be good just to hear, you know, why the dedication, why the perseverance, why was it so important to keep this kind of institution going? And I know that there are times when, you know, other people may have were involved and left the club, or maybe even, you know,
people have moved away.
Absolutely.
So that's one thing. I came into the group by invitation.
Sure.
I didn't just walk in the door and start talking. So the fact that I was invited was important enough to me to say, I must commit to this. If I can't commit to it, then I need to stay home.
Yeah.
But I choose to come every third Sunday of the month to meet with women who want to talk about literature. We could talk about anything else, but how often can you get together and talk books?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, with well-read women, and the women have richness to them. They all come with their own stories, and it starts with the book, and it ends with, you know, social discussions and figuring out how to make our communities better. And I look forward to it.
Okay, because
Absolutely.
That's the other, you know, sometimes people say these book clubs, they call them the meet, greet, and eat.
We'll share a meal,
Absolutely.
But the important part is that you discuss literature.
Exactly.
You talk about the characters in the book and the setting, and you can bring in something else you know, but the book, the writer's purpose,
mm-hmm.
what informed the author is very important. So there's one book I remember, Michelle Alexander's book.
Mm.
Gosh, why isn't the title coming? But she's a professor at OSU Law School.
Exactly.
And she wrote the new Jim Crow.
Yes. Thank you. We've been talking about it for three or four months.
Exactly.
So,
the new Jim
Crow.
Right.
So it's something that, yeah, maybe we thought about it, but she put it in writing, backed it up with statistical information.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think her book was also a call to action,
mm-hmm.
so that if you have even an inkling of consciousness, you know that there is something you can do, whether
exactly.
it's support a family of a family of a family, go to a rally, write a letter, do something. But she didn't leave you hanging with, oh, this was a cute or a nice book.
Yeah.
It was an intelligent book that I think a lot of people should read.
Right. And really a call to action. And do you also see that as an outgrowth of the club, Deborah?
Very much so. In fact, over the years, it's corralled us to talk about what can we do. We actually have conversations about that. I mean, it's nice having these conversations, but what can we do? Often there's somebody already involved with this particular, whatever the struggle is at the time, and we can lend ourselves to that by showing up, going to the rally, like you said, writing a letter. And the other part of it is taking that message back. You know, we have a closed membership, but that doesn't mean that information doesn't get out. So we spend a lot of time, and I know I do, with other people saying, this is what we just discussed. This is something that came out. Often there are things going on, and there's just not enough time in the day to keep up with every issue. And at book group, that's where it all happens, and then you can take it out from there.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll definitely come back and continue the discussion with the book that you have for this month, correct?
All right.
So the multi-talented Fay Wray is the host for the Children's Hour, a fun-filled hour of children tales, poems, short stories, live interviews, best-selling children's authors, and a whole lot more. Remember that we are all children at heart. Heard Fridays exclusively on TalkTainmentRadio.com. You may join in the conversation by calling or sending a question. You may join in the conversation by sending a question to Crossing Cultures crosscultureTT@gmail.com or like Crossing Culture Travel and Tours on Facebook. So now we want to talk about your current book. And I believe that's Americana.
Yes, it is.
By Chimamanda Ngozi
Adichie.
Adichie.
Yes.
So who would like to start us off and tell us a bit about this book?
Okay, I'll take the floor. First of all, this is an award-winning book. 2013 National Book Critics Circle Award. And the author is prolific. She has at least three other books under her belt. And this is the first that I've read of her writing, but I've heard her TED Talks, and she also has a website where she shares insights. Okay, now back to Americana. I don't mean to sound simplistic, but it's an international family story slash love story, people struggling to find themselves mm-hmm. in the world. Mm-hmm. And so she starts with one of the main characters, Ife Melu, who is a young girl, and her family is facing some struggles as part of, say, political upheaval in their country of Nigeria. But it doesn't always focus on the struggle within the country, but how it affects each member of her set of characters she's pulled together. So, Ife Melu, the young woman who is quite a little upstart. She's not a child to take the easy answer. She wants to know why. She's a questioner. Mm-hmm. We see her through childhood, through young adult, to adulthood. I'd say she comes mm-hmm. close to 35, 40 by the time the book comes to closure. One of the strong women in her life, Aunty Uju, who guides her through so much of what she experiences and learns while in Nigeria and then when she goes to America. And her Ife Melu's boyfriend, Obinez, also known as the Zed in the book, you know, quite a dashing, charming character, a man with feeling, a man with commitment to those he cares about. Mm-hmm. He's like a magnet to his friends. So, love story, yes, international scene. You get political background thrown in. At the time that Ife Melu is a student in university, Nigeria is experiencing some upheaval. And we see how she and her compadres work through this. Some of them go off to either the U.S. or England to continue their schooling. Ife Melu chooses to let go of 3 years worth of university work to come to the United States to finish her degree. That was what she saw as her way of out. She had to finish her degree. Her love interest goes to Nsukka and finishes, University of Nsukka, and then goes to London to try and make his way. It's not quite as good for him, but it wasn't good for her in America either. Her Auntie Uju eventually becomes an MD, which is what she always wanted to do. But she has some well-worn heels by the time she reaches that place where she wanted to be. So I'm going to stop there.
Okay. Diane was being real ginger. Well-worn heels. I love it. I love the
that,
way
that
the characterization.
Just came to me all of a
I
sudden.
Love it. Because she, her characters are rich and complex. And you don't just see the boy meets girl and their struggle to get back together. Although the story is all woven about, you know, their love interest and how they keep it going and through marriages and other things going on.
Right.
But the characters are so rich and seeing through their eyes their struggle and, you know, seeing Ife coming to the United States and her struggle there and trying to figure out who she is and trying to fit in and understanding who she was as a Nigerian woman, trying to be an American, trying to make her way there. It makes sense at the time because of the struggle going on, the political mm-hmm. entity. But at the end of the day, she misses home. She misses who she is. And she has to come to face with who she is as a person. And in so doing, all the other things that were woven in. The auntie, I'm thinking, as smart as this woman was, and we see it a lot of times with people that we know, people, you think, why would they make those choices? Why would you make this choice? If you're smart enough to be a physician, you've made your way that way, why would you, you know, subjugate yourself and do this with this, with the man? It just doesn't make sense in some ways, but just shows you the complexity of the human nature that transcends, I believe, culture. It really has to do with figuring out who you are and developing a confidence in embracing who you are to do what you have to do. So the book really weaves a tale. And you see it through the eyes of her, Ife, and her blog, and which I thought was real fascinating.
Yeah, that was a creative way to pull a book together. Ife Melu is a blogger.
Explain to me the blog, yeah.
Okay. She's been a writer since childhood. Okay, so one of the things that she does in the States is start blogging because it becomes a way for her to earn an income. Mm-hmm. She's a broke student. And in starting to blog, she also creates an economic base for herself. But she compares and contrasts her life as an African in America with African Americans. She faces race head on and has her own take on it. So, for instance, she talks about, give me one, Deb, that she, one of her
blogs.
Oh,
she had some great stuff. Let me see, I can find
it
quick.
It's sarcastic, it's sassy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. While you look, let me just add something, because I did also read the book.
Okay.
And I just want to kind of begin to contrast some of the technical or the techniques that were used, because when you talk about the blog, you know, traditionally in African culture, and I think, you know, it's going to be important to talk about some of the contrasts as we go through, there was a person known as a griot.
Yes.
And the griot, you know, really was the
storyteller
and was a historian, was a social commentator.
Right.
And so when I looked at the blog, I saw her as the griot. I saw her as the person documenting through these stories, you know, these observations. And so then you can go back and then actually, you know, challenge your understanding or the validity or whatever.
Exactly.
But as the griot, she has put it in a format. And very often, you know, the griot would also have these proverbs or morals.
Absolutely.
And but, I think that there were, and so I don't know whether it was either the title sometimes or even, you know, within the body of the blog, but every once in a while I got this, it was like an epigraph, and I would say, okay, there's the moral, there's the proverb.
Yeah, sure. Like she did one called Black people are not supposed to be angry about racism because their anger makes white people uncomfortable. And she's writing about that. I mean, she feels very comfortable writing about the things that people would think about, but they wouldn't actually put pen to paper.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that realm was, again, because the griot was sanctioned by society to be able to comment.
Absolutely.
Without being, you know, held
judged.
Responsible.
Censored or judged.
Exactly. Without being judged. So
I just found one. Understanding America for the Non-American Black. What do WASP aspire to?
Yes.
And so there was always humor.
Absolutely.
Very much so.
And but so, she looked at it as a non-American Black.
Right.
So let's talk about that. What's with the non-American Black? Why can't she just be, or why did she want to identify just as a Black?
She could, but that would not have been authentic, because people have a way of letting others know, wait a minute, you're not really a part of this. We look at you, we see you, but you're not from America.
You don't know our struggle. You don't.
So some of her blogs address that. Like, how can you determine whose struggle is worse?
Yeah.
It's all struggle. It's all been hard for all of us. But she, I don't know. She wove through those kind
of
issues.
But without judging struggle, isn't it authentic that Africans who are not born and raised in America are not don't have that struggle. They have a different history.
They do. And I think she understood that, but she would not let that put her off from addressing issues and exactly. challenging assumptions. Some of those assumptions are like old and worn out and like we need to either do something about it or let it go.
Right.
But
and she seemed to be confronting the whole notion of race in America. As coming from Nigeria, there was a class system, but not race as we know it. And
right.
so coming, trying to muddle through all of that and figure out what's going on here. That, and I think she was presenting herself that way, that I don't understand all this piece. And so she mm-hmm. talked about it, I think, because it's like this race thing. What's mm-hmm. that all about? Just a notion of skin color, really, mm-hmm. and not necessarily class. And social standing. And so she really addresses that.
And in many respects, African Americans don't deal with the class issues
exactly.
as just the same way.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
She talked about one time about why do they say blacks and poor whites, mm-hmm. but don't say poor blacks and poor whites kind right. of thing. It just, you know, because they just think of if you're black
or you're that.
That.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, the migrant experience, what was your take on that? Mm.
I saw it more as it was also a mental, but for Ife, it was economic and it was political and the social part of it. So there were things she saw here that just threw her off entirely. But having been grounded, I think, by her aunt and her family in Nigeria, she waded through some things without being permanently scarred. So, for instance, she had to figure out a way to get her tuition paid, to keep a roof over her head, even though she had three or four roommates. She was still responsible for part of the rent. Things that students do now, ramen noodles,
mm-hmm.
whatever her version of ramen noodles was.
Yeah, I love it.
She did her version of ramen noodles. Making all of those treks to restaurants to get a simple hostessing job, which yeah. she probably would have, you know, done very well at, but she encountered American racism. Mm-hmm. Nope, I don't think we'll be hiring this little
no.
person. And sink into the depths of depression and then having a friend who helped keep her from going too far and just losing it. So,
yeah. And being so far away from home. And yep. even when she encountered other Africans, that wasn't the same experience. So now she is, you know, trying to be herself and her own experience, but she would encounter someone who's there and trying to figure out who would want to leave America, the land of the free,
exactly.
the home of the brave.
Because earlier you mentioned that there was this aspirational motivation in
yeah.
terms of, you know, if you would, and there's a sense that, you know, anywhere in America is better than anywhere that I came from.
Exactly.
and then so the realization that, no, that's not quite the case.
No.
And what it took, and that in order for people then to get back on track, they really have to, as Diane said, you know, plumb the depths. I mean, you
exactly.
really
mm-hmm.
have to go through a transformative process,
yeah.
you know, and then you really understand where your
clearly.
Values
mm-hmm.
are.
Or coming of age.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a coming of age aspect to the novel of well as
Absolutely.
Well for she and her primary love interest. I mean,
yeah.
there, there are a couple of others, but for the primary one.
Well, I like the fact that she was also fiercely independent in her choice of who she chose to be with,
mm-hmm.
why she was with them, and when it was time to go,
she's gone.
She just left.
She making apologies, needing yeah. apologies. She was gone.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. It's over.
But that was part of her personality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so she sounds like this very very vibrant, very
yes.
You wanted to get to know her, like you want to run into her in a cafe. You want to have had an experience just somewhere on the fringes of her life. It made you want to connect with the character.
Okay. So we will be back, but this is TalkTainmentRadio.com. Check us out on WCRS-FM 98.3 Wednesday and Sunday evenings. Blogs and podcasts are available. We go where you go. Download TalkTainmentRadio.com app to your cell or tablet. Radio the way it should be heard. Crossing Cultures up next.
Hey, Carol, that's your third espresso. What's going on?
I've just been to my doctor, and he's ordered lots of tests. Blood work, scans, x-rays.
Why? Is everything okay?
That's just it. I don't really know the whole story.
Well, I think the best thing you can do is get more involved in your own health care and get some information.
How do I do that?
One of the most important things you can do for your health is to ask questions. Be an active and informed member of your healthcare team. Remember, your healthcare is about you. For starters, you should ask what condition you're being tested for, how the tests will be done, how soon you'll get the results, and what happens after that. Learn more about what questions to ask about medical tests and other aspects of your health care. Get the brochure, Be Prepared for Medical Appointments, available at ahrq.gov/consumer. That's ahrq.gov/consumer. A message from the U.S. Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality.
For more than 50 years, the U.S. Small Business Administration has been helping entrepreneurs become large, successful companies. Many of these you recognize: Under Armour, Jenny Craig, Outback Steakhouse, Restoration Hardware, Ben & Jerry's, Nike, Sun Microsystems, FedEx, Hewlett-Packard, just to name a few. SBA's programs and services provide an advantage to help small businesses effectively compete in the marketplace. SBA can help you start a business, from creating a business plan to providing loan guarantee. Training and counseling programs are offered on our site 24/7. See if you're ready to start a business or ready to expand through federal government contracting or exporting. Whether your business is on Main Street or cyberspace, possibilities are endless. SBA, helping small businesses start, grow, and succeed. You can check us out at www.sba.gov.
We're cracking down on Medicare fraud.
The health care law gives us powerful tools to fight it,
to investigate it,
prosecute it,
and stop criminals.
Our senior Medicare patrol volunteers
are teaching seniors across the country
to stop, spot, and report fraud.
You can help.
Guard your Medicare card.
Don't give out your card number over the phone.
Call to report any suspected fraud.
We're cracking down on Medicare fraud.
Let's make Medicare stronger for all of us.
You are now listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com and WCRS 98.3 and 102.1 FM, Central Ohio's only community radio station, a service of the Neighborhood Network and TalkTainmentRadio.com.
Presenting Great Moments in the History of 1-800-FED-INFO. For years, Americans have turned to 1-800-FED-INFO for government information. Make your own great moment. Call 1-800-FED-INFO. It's government made easy.
TalkTainmentRadio.com, the world's greatest radio. That's radio the way it should be heard. This is Julia Lynn Walker on Crossing Cultures with Deborah Johnson and Diane Middleton of the Columbus African American Bibliophiles Book Club. You may join in the conversation by sending a question or comment to crossingcultures.tt or at gmail.com, or like Crossing Cultures Travel and Tours on Facebook. Crossing Cultures Travel and Tours provides a wide range of services to meet your traveling needs, whether for individuals or groups. When you are traveling for business or leisure, we can provide you with an end-to-end service that also respects Africa's global contributions. So returning to this contribution from Nigeria, the book Americana by Chimamanda Adichie. Okay.
Yes. You do that very well.
And they looked at me, so I'm like, all right. I want to first return to start with the question of the social networks, because as a migrant, as people, you know, move around the world, move into these communities, she leaves Nigeria, she comes here, you know, the main love interest leaves the Nigeria and goes to the UK. But in terms of survival, you know, what's the social framework that they encounter or that either assists or does not assist them in making this transition?
Well, I think they have assistance, and on the fringes are the people who don't want to assist you. The same thing you might find here. So for Ifemelu, her Auntie Ujo was her primary support system. She also had friends from university in Nigeria who were now here that played a role in either transporting her around to job interviews, just looking out for her, making sure she was okay. I believe if her aunt had not been in America, her time would have been very harsh.
Yeah.
Because I didn't get the feel that she had a huge network of peers in her age group from home. So her aunt was her stabilizing force. And even though her aunt was herself struggling, raising a small child, trying to go to medical school, get her degree, she still was a solid rock in Ife's life. And I think we all need that, or we will flounder. Her boyfriend of many years, Obinez, in London, where he went, he also found a circle of friends from the University of Nsukka who had, in some instances, prospered and done quite well. But he fell into what was a horrific, humiliating trap after having some success earning money. Friends arranged for him to have an arranged marriage. And at the very end, the immigration authorities swooped in and sent him back home.
Yeah.
He was out of a lot of pounds that he had honestly worked for and no longer had. But I think that gave him a determination when he got back to Nigeria that this will never happen to me again.
Okay. And Deborah?
Yeah, I agree with you, Diane, about Ife. She was just, I just think her life was hard, period. When you're so far away from home and you don't have a huge, she didn't have a huge support system.
Mm-mm, she didn't.
No, but she was willing to do whatever she needed to do. I think she was on this sojourn to find herself and to find, and I think that was, I don't think that was her initial intent.
No.
I think her initial intent was, you know, fleeing the issues there and to come here and to do well. And maybe with the intent of going back home. But when she got there, I just think she was doggedly determined. And I think that was part of her spirit, to do what she had to do, to whatever job she had to take, to however humiliating it was, to try to figure out what I need to do next. But she did have her aunt. I think it's something about family. When you've got even one family member, you can make it. If they're in your corner, it's somebody that you can look at and say, We identify with one another. It makes me think about when you go halfway across the world and you meet someone from Columbus and you're wondering, oh my gosh, oh my, it may be somebody who, if you had been in Columbus, you wouldn't have any parts of.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's a kindred spirit, they understand you, they get you, and they're going to be there for you. And you just have that connection. So I think that really sustained her. On the flip side, Obinze, I can't remember how his name is pronounced, but I think his struggle was very different. You know, he did get some success there, but I think it was humiliating for him. He wanted to stay there. He's living under the radar, and we see people here, every undocumented immigrants trying to make it. But I think if he could have, he would have stayed there, trying to do what he needed to do. But it just didn't work.
And what was also interesting to me is that as she also received, so she gave.
Yes.
Her
primary example of giving was her nephew, DK.
DK was
a small child when she first landed in America. And her early encounters with him involved babysitting because her auntie was working three jobs. So she stayed with him. She taught him division. She said, this maths, M-A-T-H-S, S on the end, you're not getting it. When I was your age, we were doing division. So he was maybe four or five, and she taught him division because that's what she knew. And she gave him a head up in school. He encountered some pretty routine, ugly stuff mm-hmm. as a young black child in America, possibly because he was non-American black, mm-hmm. although he was black.
Yeah.
And she was his rock in terms of stabilizing him emotionally and psychologically, because as he got older, he encountered the kind of insidious, racist kind of experiences in the school system.
Yeah.
And she was there for him.
Okay. So, and then when we look at the school system and how education is presented as a whole in the novel, do you think it's presented favorably? Is American education presented in a favorable light as compared, say, to education in Nigeria or education in the UK? I mean, was it worth it?
Wow. It was portrayed in the book as once you come to America, I'm looking for a word that says easy. There was no substance.
Exactly.
And so having done 3 previous years at Nsukka, when she went through her classes here, it was like, I think, a snooze. And then on the level of her her cousin, by her preparing him, he was also able to move through with a little bit of ease. So I would think the way non-American education was presented was that it was a harder
challenge.
You had more mm-hmm. things you had to address versus within the American university system and primary, secondary education. Okay, you can get through this.
Mm-hmm. And I felt like, I think there was a sharp contrast between mm-hmm. the two education systems, and it was a commentary about the fact that here in America, we're trying to keep kids in school. I mean, there's all this stuff going on, but it wasn't even around. It certainly wasn't as seen as superior. People aren't coming here to get the superior education. I think you're right. They're coming here to get through so they can go back to get the credential mm-hmm. and to go back or to navigate or to perfect their English, because English then does something for them globally. But there was a big contrast between what they were talking about at home and how superior they were to us. And it was just a getting through, if you will.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of we have really talked about the presence of white people. Were there any white people in the book?
Yeah.
There were white people in the book.
And how were they represented?
Okay, let's take the largest or the most looming white person in the book, and that was Ifemelu's boyfriend. She met him through work. She was a nanny to a family, and the boyfriend came into the picture as the, was he the brother of the employer? So, however it was, he came into the story, and they had what I thought would be a long-term relationship. Judging by the passages the relationship went through. Yeah. So he was one white person. And then there were minor characters, tennis coach.
Yeah. And talking about her treatment, too, about African-American women encountering her with her boyfriend and making comments and that kind of thing. But, yeah, she. Yeah. So that was.
And then she threw in some stereotypes of people in academia.
Okay.
In the social setting, you know. Well, not stereotypes, archetypes.
Archetypes. That's good. That's a thing. They checked the box. Okay. TalkTainmentRadio.com, the world's greatest radio. That's radio the way it should be heard. This is Julia Lynn Walker on Crossing Cultures with Diane Middleton and Deborah Johnson, representing the Columbus African American Bibliophiles Club. So we've checked the box. We've got, and so how are other Africans